This is Second Look, only on 103.3 WZND. Here to take a second look at the stories the WZND Newsroom has covered this week. Investigative reporting from the award-winning WZND News Team, here for you. Unbiased, engaging, and comprehensive. Second Look starts now.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Second Look, the show where we take an in-depth second look at last week's stories. I'm Colleen Holden.
I'm Joe DeLahunty.
And I'm Luke Biondi. Today we will be looking at info on crime in the community, updates to the Higher Education User Group Board of Directors, Representative Eric Sorensen's recent visit to Heartland Community College, the recent National Day of Silence, and an update on Redbird softball.
On April 3rd, Normal police responded to shots fired in the 100 block of Kennebec Court. No one was injured, but the police continue to investigate the incident. I talked to Public Information Officer Brad Park about how police handle this sort of situation.
I was curious about the aggravated discharge of a firearm, 100 block Kennebec Court, back on the 3rd. Did you know anything about that?
I do, yep.
Great. What can you tell me?
So still an active investigation, so we can't really put out a whole lot of information, but looks like our officers were sent out there around 7:40 p.m. on the 3rd, got a couple initial reports of what sounded like shots fired in the area, and when our officers responded, they eventually kind of narrowed it down that it was in the Kennebec Court area and located a apartment complex that appeared to have some damage to it due to gunfire.
So obviously, thankfully, no one was hurt in this one. What's the procedure for this type of incident?
Yeah, so obviously our main goal is to make sure there's no victims, nobody had been struck by gunfire, so we did make contact with an area apartment which had some damage around it and made sure everyone was fine. Kind of the first thing we do is just start speaking with witnesses, victims, making sure we can gather as much information as possible, seeing if, you know, anybody saw anything, and our patrol division can kind of work that kind of in the initial stages of the investigation.
How long does it generally take to try to resolve this type of thing?
Well, it could take a lot of different lengths. We obviously want to get it solved as quickly as possible, get the people that are doing that off the street as quickly as possible. So it just depends on the type of witnesses and information that we can gather in a quick amount of time. We can sometimes, you know, make an arrest generally the day of the incident or the day after if we can get some good either video or witness statements and get some different suspects identified. But we've also had cases where, you know, it's gone a little bit longer where it takes time, maybe even another incident comes up, and as we're doing an interview with somebody, they're, you know, then willing to provide information on a different incident. So it just really depends.
Is there anything you can tell me about how that process is going this time?
So we did interview several witnesses to the incident. We all obviously also look at different types of evidence that we can look into, whether that's video, using maybe our automated license plate reader cameras, different things like that. I would say right now it's still, like I said, it's still a pending active investigation, still doing some follow-up with some witnesses and just kind of gathering information at this time.
Illinois State's Office of Technology Solutions Executive Director Tom Smoke was recently named to the Higher Education User Group Board of Directors. HUEG helps institutions manage their administration of technologies. Smoke talks about how his new position will benefit ISU.
General questions. How do you feel about being named to this position of Higher Education User Group Board of Directors?
Well, I'm excited. I also feel honored, I think. It's notable. It's recognizable. So it's good for me. It's good for the university and our position. It demonstrates our commitment to the collaborative growth of universities in this space. This group supports enterprise applications, which are essentially the applications that run the back of our environment. Campus Solutions is the product we use that does registration and tracks, you know, your transcripts and gives you a degree. And HCM is another product that does our HR and payroll and pays people and helps keep track of their benefits and those kind of things. Those are like some of the core systems that really run our institution. And then we have a bunch of supporter next systems that help, you know, drive housing and drive your Redbird card. And this higher education user group is this conglomeration of all these institutions coming together saying, hey, there's a need for us to work together and learn how to do and be optimized kind of in what we refer to often as like the back office or the administrative side of the house, you know, because I don't think there's necessarily a competition there to like who can pay people the best. We're just saying, can you pay your people? Do they get paid? Do they get benefits? Do they receive those things? Can you award degrees and make that stuff straightforward? At the same time, we want to improve the student experience. So this group has simply been around for a long time to help kind of promote education and enhancement, advancement of those tools. And it's something that we leveraged at ISU for many years as we were learning and growing in this space. Came off of a mainframe over, you know, back in 2011. And then in 2015, we kind of completely got rid of it. So we had customs. So we learned to grow into this software space. We got a lot of help from this group. And now this is a way for us to also give back to that group too. So there's some great things happening there.
So what exactly do you think that you will learn in this position that will help to improve the tech atmosphere of ISU?
Well, probably the biggest thing or the biggest exposure I'm going to have in this role is kind of at the forefront of where technology is going in this enterprise application space. What's next? When I'll have better visibility into the shift and dynamics between when do institutions start to say like, hey, there's a new leader in this space. It's worth making the switch to new software, to new technology, which we always want to kind of do, but there's an inherent cost of implementation. So anytime we say like, oh, let's get that other thing, like we just did with Canvas, right? It's not just the ongoing software cost, but there's that startup cost that happens with implementation. And the larger the piece of software, the greater that implementation cost to cut over. So this will give us more foresight into what's coming down the road and when we might want to move to the next thing and what are the right next things that are going to support an institution of our size and support us well. Because there are different fits for different sizes of institutions and the different levels of focus that institutions have in terms of like research and teaching and those things.
So what do you hope to plan or accomplish with this new position?
Well, I think, like I was saying, I get to work with other institutions of higher ed, help educate their folks on where we're going. And we also get to learn like where we should go next. So we can come together and lobby vendors for changes that are needed in the ecosystem and the environments. So that helps. We're going to do that through building the relationships and knowledge sharing with the other universities. And just be able to advocate, I think, for the own issues that we're experiencing and influence that kind of future technology advancement at the same time.
I just have one last question for you. Do you think that being in this position will help you to create stronger relationships in tech with other universities?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It already has. And I've only been in the position for, you know, a month, right? Deeper connections to other leaders at these other universities who are doing the same stuff. People are reaching out now because, you know, they're like, hey, can we talk about this? So it really does create that extra collaboration for us. It gives us extra direct inroads into other people that I may have not had before, because there are a lot of people out there, but who to talk to and who to talk to about what certain things by, you know, my profile and the ISU profile being out there, they know who we are and what we're doing and how we might be similar. And now they are proactively reaching back out too and saying, hey, we're similar. What do you guys do? That's a great way to collaborate and learn from each other and improve our overall, you know, technology support services.
We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Second Look on 103.3 WZND.
News now on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to Second Look on WZND. In case you missed it, so far we talked about crime coming to normal and promotions in the higher education user group. Representative Eric Sorensen visited Harley Community College recently to tour their new agriculture facility. Riley Klump from the newsroom spoke to Heartland Public Information Director Steve Fast about new facilities and the influence of local representatives.
Could you tell me more about the new manufacturing center and ag complex? Yes. In January, we opened up our new agriculture and our new advanced manufacturing and technology center, two different buildings. The advanced manufacturing and technology center is 45,000 square feet of added learning space. A lot of that was renovated space that had already existed in a building that we had on campus, but we added a 7,000 square foot addition for an electric vehicle technology lab.
That probably definitely helps with Rivian being in the area.
Yeah. It helps support our program, which began in 2021. Yeah, we started our electric vehicle program. So we'd since then had plans to build a facility on campus because we had been leasing a space prior to that. And we were able to move our students into that space in January.
And then how are these specific buildings expanding Heartland's reach into different fields?
Well, having this space allows us to expand our career technical education programs to get students into custom built facilities that are better suited to house some of these hands-on instructional needs. One of the examples would be with our agriculture complex. We didn't have a very good space for greenhouse work or a very good space for test plots. So not only do we have the flexible classroom space that's in the facility, but the facility itself is surrounded by test plot areas that the students can utilize as they are involved in plant science, and also the three greenhouses that we have that are connected to the facility.
Overall, what are your hopes with the new buildings? Or what is the college, I guess, hoping to gain by building these new facilities for students?
Well, the new facilities support what we saw as a need for more career technical education instruction space. So what we hope to do is help meet the needs of our community in giving students an opportunity to either advance in a two-year degree fairly quickly in these fields or to get some short-term certifications, and in turn help the community itself. Agriculture is very big in Central Illinois. In fact, we have about 1,300 high school students in our district that are involved in agriculture programs. And when it comes to the industry, agriculture employment is the third employer in the district behind insurance and education. So there is a need for more qualified workers to enter the ag field. And when it comes to advanced manufacturing, we see the need in HVAC, electronics, high voltage energy storage, renewable energy, welding, fabrication, automation, and electric vehicles. So those are all programs that are supported by that space. So the demand is there, and we just wanted to have the facilities to best support the instruction of those programs.
And then so far, would you say that the staff and students are enjoying them?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of excitement around campus because these facilities are new and they're state of the art, and there are a lot of really neat features, both with how they look aesthetically and how they are usable. For instance, if you walk down the hall towards the Advanced Manufacturing Center, as soon as you enter that center, you see giant robotic arms in the robotics lab, and that's not something that you would necessarily just come across. And the buildings are designed so you can see those spaces, so you kind of have a showcase for these programs, so people that might not even necessarily know where they want to go can get exposed to this technology and these exciting programs by just seeing them.
How did Heartland feel about Congressman Eric Sorensen visiting and touring the facilities?
Well, we were definitely pleased to have visits from not only Congressman Sorensen, but also Congressman LaHood over the last couple of weeks. And it's great to see them be able to fit it into their schedule to visit the college, to see the programs that we have that are helping support their community, so they can see how we are doing our part as a community college to help with the economic well-being and health of the community, to help support the jobs that I'm sure they both want to see grow within our district and in Central Illinois.
And then why do you think it is important for our representatives to interact?
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, we meet a lot with our elected leaders, our legislative leaders, both in statewide office and also in the area offices that we have for our elected representatives in the district. And I think it really helps for them to see the facilities themselves and see our students, see the future leaders that we have learning what they need to know to become the next generation of the workforce that we have here. So we talk about about these programs quite often, and we often have a good relationship with elected officials to see how they can help out and help our students, not only through ways of appropriation in the bills that they vote for or the things that they support, to help not only our community, but help the college, you know, with funding, help our students with access to financial aid and resources. But when they see these things themselves and they can kind of put it in their head, this is what we're supporting. This is a big part of our community, and this is how they, as legislators, can help fuel what we ultimately see as the health and welfare of our community here in Central Illinois.
It's definitely important to see exactly what you're impacting, because sometimes it's hard to picture it until you're in the moment and you're like actually seeing, oh, like, I've helped build this up. I've helped contribute to this.
Yeah. And also, you know, I mean, they also share the things that they see here amongst others. So when we had Governor Pritzker here in February to be here for the ribbon cutting of our EV facility, he said, this program that you have is a model for what other schools could be doing, not only throughout the state, but throughout the country. This is the type of thing that will help with renewable energy manufacturing in the future.
The second Friday of April is nationally recognized as the Day of Silence, where people stay silent in solidarity with the LGBTQIA+ community against homophobic transgressions and silencing of the community as a whole. I sat down with Becca Mackey, president of ISU's registered student organization, Students Ending Rape Culture, to discuss why recognizing this day is important to them and other events they're holding during Sexual Assault Awareness Month.
So there's a lot of events going on for Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Do you want to just kind of like list them off and give like a few details about them?
Yeah, sure. So this was our supposed to be our second one. It's Day of Silence. This is the one where high school students started it as to stand in solidarity with LGBTQ+ students who had been victims of harassment or bullying and had been forcibly silenced by administration or teachers. We were supposed to have Clothesline Project last week, but the weather was too bad, so we didn't end up doing it. So that got moved to Be With Denim Day on the last week. I think it's Wednesday, April 24th. We're doing Clothesline Project and Denim Day at the same time. Clothesline is the one with all the t-shirts up with the survivor stories, and Denim Day is the one where everyone wears denim because of a Supreme Court case in Italy that was thrown out one time because the woman's jeans were too tight for her to not have consented. And then we have Consent Day, which is one that we kind of made up, and that is going to be on Monday, so that's when we get a bunch of organizations together to talk about why consent is important to them and important to our campus.
Yeah, perfect. You talked about all the different events. I know Clothesline is one that we do regularly. Denim Day is a yearly thing. Do you just want to talk about some of the more impactful moments of continuously doing events like these?
Yeah, sure. I think the most impactful one is definitely Clothesline, because that's when we have blank t-shirts available for people to make their own, and that's when we get a lot of people coming and sharing their stories for oftentimes the first time. And it's really cathartic for a lot of people, like very emotional. They like cry and like share their stories. It's really nice to see that that's something healing for them. It's also really nice when people come up to us and learn for the first time what Sexual Assault Awareness Month is, because it is relatively surprising how many people just don't know and don't know how big of a problem sexual assault is, and then learn and then want to get involved, like come up and ask us how they can get involved, like when we meet and stuff. That's really great too.
I know that CERC now has a position on the SGAS. Has there been any, like, specific projects that you've been working on that you've been able to get through, or just, like, ways that you've worked with the group?
Yeah, just recently, Lauren and I, this is Lauren, wrote resolutions about the Title IX office. The first one was asking if they make their information more easily available, like their statistics and stuff.
Yeah.
Because by law, we're supposed to be able to see how many reports there are a year and like whether they were resolved. And we do have access to that information, but it's very, really deep in our general crime report and really hard to find if you don't know what you're looking for. So we took examples from like Northwestern and U of I, who have their own separate slideshows and own separate documents about their Title IX offices, and asked that they make it look more like that and make it easier to both read and find. And then the second one, we asked for an internal audit on our Title IX office, because I'm sure you're aware that Title IX nationally, it kind of sucks, especially since 2020. Like, there's a lot of regulations, and they make it really hard on the victims and a lot easier on the perpetrators. So in general, like, report rates have been really low. But we did a little bit of math, and our report rates are about, like, 3% lower than other schools' report rates, which is pretty good, like, bad. So we're basing this off of, like, it's supposed to be, the national statistic is 20 to 25% of people. And then, so we kind of took that and applied it here, and
out of 20,683 students,
we had 28 reports last year, which is, like, 0.65% maybe. So that's like pretty bad. We asked for an audit to look into why that is, if it's like underfunding, understaffing, because like I said, it is bad in general. Like a lot of it has to be blamed nationally, but like for our numbers to be that much lower than other schools, it's like.
So Day of Silence is more focused on the LGBT mm-hmm. plus community. And yeah, like, well, of course, gay personality is important. That's not really like what CERT stands for. So to talk about like the importance of like the crossover between the groups and why like CERT is standing with the community.
Yeah, for sure. It would be really kind of unhelpful for us to sit here and pretend like there aren't disparities for marginalized communities when it comes to sexual assault. Black women specifically are at have much higher rates of sexual assault and rape. Trans women have a lot higher rates of sexual assault and rape. It's like we can't really ignore those numbers and just pretend that there is no disparities between communities, because rape and sexual assault can and do happen to everyone, but we really need to address the groups it's happening to more and why that is, and make sure that they know that we see them specifically and that we want to help them.
We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Second Look on 103.3 WZND.
You're listening to Second Look, only on WZND.
Welcome back to Second Look on WZND. In case you missed it so far, we've talked crime in Bloomington Normal, promotions in the Higher Education User Group, and Representative Eric Sorensen's touring Heartland's new Agriculture Center.
A budget for the planned revitalized project for downtown Bloomington was approved yesterday by the Bloomington City Council. Much of the $60 million agreed-upon budget is dedicated to upgrading the Central Plaza, encompassing the McLean County History Museum, with other aspects of the revitalization being aimed at improving walkability and bikeability downtown. As a part of this project, Grossinger Motors Arena will receive around $7 million in renovations.
The ISU Office of Sustainability will collect eclipse glasses for them to be reused or recycled. The Office of Sustainability claims that some of these glasses may be sent to areas that are not as economically privileged as ours, leading to more equitable access to solar eclipses. This recycling program will be conducted with Astronomers Without Borders, which will help with collection and distribution.
$25 million of state funding has been spent by the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency to build EV charging stations statewide. This funding will put EV charging stations at 141 new locations, including locations in central Illinois. State officials hope that this initiative will increase the feasibility of purchasing an electric vehicle among Illinois residents.
Rivian's market capitalization has decreased by about 10% over the last week, reflecting investors' weariness about overfunding the EV sector. On Friday, Rivian stock took a particularly sharp decline, dropping around 5%, leading the EV startup to close this week with a market cap 93% lower than its IPO. The Rivian plant is currently undergoing a three-week planned shutdown for technology upgrades and will resume normal operation on the 28th.
Men's tennis lost 7-0 against number 43 ranked Denver yesterday. Also yesterday, softball lost 5-6 against Evansville, and women's tennis defeated Northern Iowa 7-0. ISU softball is currently ahead in its series against Valparaiso. On Friday, the team took care of business, getting a 10-0 victory over the Beacons. In Game 2, the Redbirds got an 8-3 win. Be sure to tune in to WZND.com, where Kason Shingothi and Dylan Skeen have the call at 12:50 for the series finale.
Following yesterday's victory, Joey LaMaster from the news team got a quick interview with head coach Tina Kramos about the game and the future of Redbird softball.
You had a dominant 10-0 victory yesterday, and then today started off a little bit slower with them leading 1-0, but then you guys just started getting momentum. What got the bats going?
I think we just started working our timing and our pitch selection got a little bit better, and I thought we just started getting more line drives and less miss hits, less ground balls or like pop-ups.
Okay, and then you got a full game from Paige. How do you feel about her performance today?
I thought she did a nice job. They came out, they were aggressive, they swung early in the count. We made a couple of defensive miscues, which is always puts us in stressful situations, but we've worked hard on those and got out a lot of those. So,
what do you think exactly won the game for the Redbirds today?
Resilience, being ready to just keep fighting back and not laying down. So just keep going and going and going.
Yeah, that's now 9-7 in the Valley, a lot of momentum on your guys' side. What do you guys got to keep doing at Missouri Valley Conference rankings?
I think we just got to keep playing Redbird softball. We have to keep bringing all three parts of our game to the field every day we play. Our defense, our offense, and our pitching. If they all three show up, we've got a great shot of winning ball games.
Absolutely.
So, awesome.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Second Look. Today we looked at info on crime in the community, updates to the Higher Education User Group Board of Directors, Representative Eric Sorensen's recent visit to Heartland Community College, the recent National Day of Silence, and an update on Redbird softball.
I'm Colleen Holden.
I'm Joey Delahunty.
And I'm Luke Biondi.
This is WZND's Second Look.